accession number 24925, reel 8.
Now, you've been talking about the gremlins, and you've been talking about vertigo and things like that. Are you able to give us examples of the way that the plane would not quite work?
You'd feel that things weren't happening properly, or to be quite honest, I never experienced any gremlins, but they're talked about. I think you've got to be pretty practical about this. It might be someone's due to pilot error said that something happened, and solemnly say, "Oh, well, that was the gremlins," but I don't know. But it was just a thing that was talked about.
Well, Nobby Clark was talking about people that would actually be flying straight and think they were the right way up and be actually flying upside down.
Well,
things like that.
I think that was the vertigo that he was talking about. You feel that not in control of it. I remember in Scotland, a fellow called Frank Terry. Very good pilot. We were night flying in on Beaufighter Mark II's, the inline Merlin, and on the radio, he said, "All my instruments have gone wrong." And he crashed into the ground. Well, they worked out later that the instruments were perfectly all right. But you get that feeling, something wrong. And you have to take a good look at yourself and concentrate on your flying instruments and concentrate very, very hard. And then the feeling goes after a while. And I think that even with people with a lot of experience, I remember once after about 17,000 hours, I got a touch of vertigo, you just hold on for a few seconds, and you're all right again. And it didn't come back. Yeah. So it can happen to anyone.
So we're talking obviously about the ops in Burma. How are you hearing about the war and the way it was going?
Well, we didn't hear much about it. As I say, we knew nothing about the ops in that particular occasion. All everyone knew that Lord Louis Mountbatten was the commander in chief. We knew our own CO, and we met the Earl of Bandon, who was the commanding officer of our wing, he used to come down and play poker dice with us. Paddy Bandon, nice fella. And we used to hear what's going on the BBC. It was always interesting. But that's all we got about it. And I think that I mentioned to you that about three-quarters of the way through my tour of Ops, we're visited by two Australian officers who said to us, asked me, they got me aside, and they interviewed everyone privately. They said, "Now tell me, are you being treated properly? And is there any discrimination that you're an Australian?" Of course, there wasn't. New Zealanders and South Africans and Canadians. We're just 177 squadron. There was no feeling of. Anyhow, all was well. And he said, "Now, what would you like to do after that you finish this tour?" And I said, "I'd like to go and fly the Dakotas over the hump." going to Chongqing and Kunming, and I thought it sounded rather interesting. It'd be marvellous to fly without being shot at, and I thought it'd be a pushover. But anyhow, at the end of the, I wasn't posted there. I was posted back to Australia. But we were looked after very well, treated the same as anyone else, and I think that the. I remember coming back to Australia, and one fellow said, well, did you ever feel that you should have had an Australian CO? Should there have been an Australian squadron? I suppose it would have been nice to have been in an Australian squadron, but we weren't, and we weren't particularly worried about it. Because we're all posted to England with the idea that we'd go on to Australian squadron. But of course, a lot of people from all over the world arrived in England, and you're just posted where you're needed, and any squadron at all. I don't honestly think anyone minded that. No one objected to it. I think the politicians at home probably felt strongly about it, but it didn't worry us.
In relation to your final operation, what sort of celebrations were had?
They had a lot of singing. We had a piano. We'd sing songs and drink. We were issued with, I can't remember how much beer we had. We had unlimited Carew's gin. Carew's booze for air crews, they said. And We'd drink gin and not lime juice, squash, gin and squash and water. And we consumed a lot of it. It didn't seem to hurt us. I can remember once, a fellow called Keith Reed, an Australian, his birthday, and his mother or wife had sent him some gum leaves, and we sat on the floor of the mess in Turinga, which was a bamboo floor, woven bamboo, and we lit these gum leaves, and it was quite nostalgic to smell the smell of the burning gum leaves, and we all enjoyed it. And much to the hilarity of all the Canadians and English and Scottish, and that didn't worry us.
Were you aware of the way that the Pacific War was being handled?
No, not at all. Didn't hear a thing about the Pacific War.
You were mentioning that your last op was in late 1944.
Well, I tried to. I must look it up, but I think it was about the 3rd of September, 1944. After that, it was I was just hanging around waiting for posting. And one night I was on duty at the control tower, and I was sending a group of fellows off on ops. And the last one to take off, a Canadian, took off, and he didn't climb. And I kept my eye on him. I could see his light. And he turned in a half circle, unfortunately towards the hills, and bang, exploded. And I luckily enough had a handheld prismatic compass, and I quickly took a sight on the where the crash was, and I can remember it was 138 degrees. So I remembered that, and still remember it.
You mentioned you went out to get the body done.
Well, yes, the CEO said, well, you're not doing any flying. You might as well go out there and look into the crash and bury them and do all the rest of it. It was quite interesting. We went up the Matamahari River with a fellow called Joe Marquis. He was a navigator, had just finished his tour as well. And we had a Bren gun and a shotgun, and we felt like a couple of great hunters. We took took a lot of gin with us and went up river, and we eventually, I'd already flown over the area and pinpointed it, knew exactly where it was and taken photographs of it. Anyhow, we went out there. It was quite exciting, really. We went out, you'd see these great enormous piles of elephant dung, 3 feet high. You knew they were lurking around somewhere. And you're really out in the jungle, and you realise just you'd had no hope of flying back, you know, walking back if you shot down. Anyhow, we found this group, these bodies, and buried them and marked them. Remember, I marked the pilot's grave with the remnants of a rocket rail for the pilot, and a machine gun for the navigator. So later, I believe they were taken. The remains were taken back and buried properly. But that was quite a different thing to what I'd been doing.
And the sort of keenness to get back to Australia was.
Oh yes, we're always very keen. The reason I was, you know, as soon as we knew that Australia was being attacked severely, we wanted to get back to put our oar in here. But of course, we realised that you're caught up in a machine that didn't allow this. And but we're happy to get back. I suppose that anyhow, I came. On a boat after the war, an American Liberty ship.
Where were you until the end of the war?
I finished this tour in India. I never saw the navigator again for about 30 years. I flew over to Bombay and waited there for a week, or might have been two, and got on the Liberty ship and came back to Australia. And I remember they sent my trunk with a lot of my belongings, my logbook and all sorts of things, and they were going to send it by train. And I said, was most upset about this. Thought, knowing the train system in India, I'd never see it again. Anyhow, I'd go down to the railway station in Bombay every day to look for this thing. And the last day, I found the trunk and took charge of it and put it on board the ship.
Where were you when you heard of VE Day?
VE Day, I was at a place called Ranchi. We'd been, the weather had become very, very bad, and it was. What was VE Day? About June the...
May the 8th.
May the 8th, was it? Well, I think it was... The weather was bad in Burma, and we're taken back to Ranchi, which is in the state of Bihar, the province of Bihar, and to do a rocket course. And we heard of the VE Day there. They all celebrated, and we realised that it wasn't over until the Japanese had capitulated.
Had it sort of come as a surprise?
The VE Day. Well, we knew it was imminent. You know, we knew the Russians were attacking one side, and it wasn't really a surprise, I suppose. But, of course, in a war situation, you're never absolutely certain about anything until it's done. But there was a great deal of celebration at Ranchi. I remember while I was there, I ate a dish of chicken chow mein at a Chinese restaurant, and I caught amoebic dysentery. So while the squadron were resting and having a marvellous time, I spent the whole time in hospital getting over this amoebic dysentery, which they say you never get over, but thank goodness it's never reoccurred. So,
how did the locals treat you?
What, in Ranchi or anywhere? Well, in a way, you didn't have much to do with the locals. You're confined, you're not confined, but everything was provided for in the camp, in Feni and Choringa. And there was no need to have anything to do with the natives. All you had to do was your bearer. A group of fellows would present themselves to you, and you'd select a bearer who was most essential. He did your washing, your dobying, and tidied up, and cleaned things, make things neat for it. And I missed that when I came home, having a bearer, and they were very good. I remember paying my bearer, which is about the standard price, 28 rupees a month. Must have been a rupee a day, which is about, I think it was about 2 shillings a day then. And he looked after you and did your mending and did their washing and ironing. And if you're short of something, he would borrow it from the next bearer. It was very satisfactory. And they were a cheerful lot.
You talk about the bearers being a cheerful lot. Being very satisfactory. What contact did you have with the Americans?
None at all.
Sorry, you're talking about the contact with the
people. The only contact I had with Americans was when I landed at Michener. And that's the only time. I only spent an overnight with them. But I must tell you a story about General Wingate. He was a great leader, but inclined to be rather an impatient man, I believe. And he asked the RAF to take him from A to B in a forward area. And the RAF fellow said, I'm afraid I can't go, the weather's too bad. And the weather used to be shocking. Anyhow, so I believe it's reported that Wingate stamped out and said, well, I'll get the Americans to do it, the RAF are no good. So he got the Americans to do it. Anyhow, they took off, crashed in a violent rainstorm, they were all killed. So,
what was the reputation of the Americans?
Well, as I say, I had no contact with them. There was no... apart from the fact that they did a lot of talking on the radio, and we heard about poor old Wally Prigwell being shot down by him. Well, we didn't know who had shot him down, but I think the Americans must have reported they'd shot a Japanese aircraft down, and we lost ours, and it was... we didn't actually know about that at the time. You see, they just shot it down. We thought, well, Piggy hadn't come back and he might have gone anywhere. But I suppose that we don't know about them. I didn't know, didn't contact them. I had a lot of contact later, but not with them in India.
Obviously, you're mentioning VE Day and where you were. Obviously, the Japanese were still in the war. What was your situation just after VE Day? What did you do? Where were you then?
Well, VE Day, it was just about that time that the Japanese started to attack Imphal. It was in June, I think, they must have attacked Imphal. And I was still in hospital, and the squadron was sent off to Imphal to use their cannon to keep them back. And I missed that, but apparently what the squadron were doing at Imphal, they were taking off fully loaded with their machine guns and cannon, and they'd be almost in the circuit area, and they'd strafe the Japanese there, then come in and let their guns cool down a bit and reload and do it again. So it was the battle for Imphal was the turning point where the Japs were pushed back into Burma. They were on the run after that from Imphal. So that's what happened after VE Day. And the squadron went from being based at Feni. They then went to Ranchi, and then from there, some were posted up to Imphal, but I finally joined them at Chiringa, which is south of Chittagong. And I remember doing. I was the only one that flew the Harvard in the Tiger Moth on the squadron. I remember we had a party in the squadron, and there were a lot of army officers that were visiting our mess. Various people used to visit the mess and have a drink. And but one of them said they couldn't get the mail out to their forward troops. And full of confidence and gin, I said, well, I'll take it out. And so I arranged to go out and get the Tiger Moth. And the army officer was supposed to sit in the back, and I was in the front. I think that was the way it was. And he was supposed to have the mail bag on his lap and tied up with a long, great long streamer of the pull-through called 4x2, great long rag around the mail. And the idea was he would direct me where to drop it. And I'd get in position, and I said to him, now, when I raise my arm, you get the mail ready, all ready, and when I drop it at once. And that will be able to put it right on the right spot. So all went well. Unfortunately, I raised my arm, and he threw the thing out at the wrong time. And I don't know if I ever got their mail, but it wasn't a roaring success. I wasn't asked to do it again. And I used to fly to Harvard from Chiringa. Remember, there's some general had to be flying back, and I was instructed to take him there, but make sure that I brought a lot of gin back. I knew where to go and how to get it. And anyhow, I took off from this Chiringa and headed straight over the ocean and straight to Calcutta. And I came back eventually with the loaded down with gin everywhere. And I was reprimanded by the CO for going direct to Calcutta instead of following the land. He said, if you'd lost an engine, you would have lost the general. I didn't say what about me, but anyhow, it all turned out well. It was quite successful. But, and in a way, I suppose towards the end of your trips, you'd lost a lot of acquaintances. As I say, I never became particularly friendly with anyone on the. Everyone seemed to keep themselves to themselves. I don't know why, but that's what happened. Later on, I've been in contact with various members of the squadron, and we've become great friends. We correspond, we use the email, And I go to see them in England and Scotland and Canada. And but there wasn't that feeling on the squadron.
In relation to the sort of coming of the end, and the Japanese obviously really taking a bit of a beating now, what were you to know in relation to that?
Well, I was posted back to Australia. Pardon me. And I did a course at Central Flying School in Point Cook as an instructor. And then I went up to instruct on an operational training unit called Williamtown in New South Wales. And the war was going on, and I'd made several moves to try and get posted to a squadron without any success. And I remember I was posted down to Cressy, a place called Cressy, to do a Spitfire course, fighter gunnery leaders course, Cressy. And the day I arrived at Cressy, the day the war finished in the Pacific. I think the bomb had been dropped, what had been. And so I had a couple of weeks flying Spitfires and then went back to the bow fighters up at Williamtown. Then my brother, who was also at Point Cook, said, what about we have a look at the islands? I hadn't been up to the islands. And he knew someone in postings, a fellow called Carew Reed. And he said he could fix that. So I said, when anything my big brother advised me to do, I thought it was all right.
In relation to the bomb being dropped, what did you know? What did you hear about that?
We heard nothing. All we'd heard that a bomb had gone off. Or we'd heard on the radio that the Americans would send out a note to quite a few cities, half a dozen cities, just to say, one of your cities is going to be destroyed tomorrow. And of course, after the third bomb, they took it very, very seriously. And so one of six, or might have been more, cities were terrified. So it had a great impact.
It was Hiroshima on the 6th of August, and then Nagasaki on the 9th.
Yeah.
The J Day in the war on the 15th. Had that come as a surprise?
Well, no, not really. No, we realised that this bombing, they'd have no chance with this bombing going on. I think one of the greatest surprises we had about the Americans when Roosevelt died. Everyone was quite upset that to hear about Roosevelt's death. So the end of the war was almost, you could say, expected.
What about the death of John Curtin, the 5th of July?
Well, 5th of July,
45.
I can't remember being here. I can't remember it. I don't remember the death of John Curtin, a very famous man from Perth. We live next to Curtin Avenue here. I know where he's buried. Buried next to my father. But It didn't have a great effect on me. I wasn't